Blomqvist sat for a long time looking at his mobile after Berger hung up. He wondered what was going on. In frustration, he looked at Salander's computer. By now she had been moved to the prison in Göteborg, and he had no chance of asking her anything. He opened his Ericsson T10 and called Idris Gidi in Angered.
"Hello, Mikael Blomqvist."
"Hello,"
Gidi said. "Just to tell you that you can stop that job you were doing for me."
Gidi had already worked out that Blomqvist would call since Salander had been taken from the hospital.
"I understand," he said.
"You can keep the mobile, as we agreed. I'll send you the final payment this week."
"Thanks."
"I'm the one who should thank you for your help."
Blomqvist opened his iBook. The events of the past 24 hours meant that a significant part of the manuscript had to be revised, and that in all probability a whole new section would have to be added. He sighed and got to work. At 11:15, Fredriksson parked 3 blocks away from Berger's house. Linda had already guessed where he was going and had stopped trying to keep him in sight. She drove past his car fully 2 minutes after he parked. The car was empty. She went on a short distance past Berger's house and stopped well out of sight. Her palms were sweating. She opened her tin of catch-dry snuff and tucked some inside her upper lip. Then she opened her car door and looked around. As soon as she could tell that Fredriksson was on his way to Saltsjöbaden, she knew that Salander's information must be correct, and obviously he had not come all this way for fun. Trouble was brewing, which was fine by her, so long as she could catch him red-handed. She took her telescopic baton from the side pocket of her car door and weighed it in her hand for a moment. She pressed the lock in the handle, and out shot a heavy, spring-loaded steel cable. She clenched her teeth. That was why she had left the Södermalm force. She had had one mad outbreak of rage when, for the third time in as many days, the squad car had driven to an address in Hägersten after the same woman had called the police and screamed for help because her husband had abused her. Just as on the first two occasions, the situation had resolved itself before they arrived. They had detained the husband on the staircase while the woman was questioned. No, she did not want to file a police report. No, it was all a mistake. No, he was fine. It was actually all her fault. She had provoked him. And the whole time the bastard had stood there grinning, looking Linda straight in the eye. She could not explain why she did it. But suddenly something snapped in her, and she took out her baton and slammed it across his face. The first blow had lacked power. She had only given him a fat lip and forced him to his knees. In the next 10 seconds, until her colleagues grabbed her and half-dragged, half-carried her out of the hallway, she had let the blows rain down on his back, kidneys, hips, and shoulders. Charges were never filed. She had resigned the same evening and gone home and cried for a week. Then she pulled herself together and went to see Dragan Armansky. She explained what she had done and why she had left the force. She was looking for a job. Armansky had been sceptical and said he would need some time to think it over. She had given up hope by the time he called 6 weeks later and told her he was ready to take her on trial. Linda frowned and stuck the baton into her belt at the small of her back. She checked that she had the mace canister in her right-hand pocket and that the laces of her sneakers were securely tied. She walked back to Berger's house and slipped into the garden. She knew that the outside motion detector had not yet been installed, and she moved soundlessly across the lawn, along the hedge at the border of the property. She could not see Fredriksson. She went around the house and stood still. Then she spotted him as a shadow in the darkness near Beckman's studio.
He can't know how stupid it is for him to come back here.
He was squatting down, trying to see through a gap in a curtain in the room next to the living room. Then he moved up onto the veranda and looked through the cracks in the drawn blinds at the big picture window. Linda suddenly smiled. She crossed the lawn to the corner of the house while he still had his back to her. She crouched behind some currant bushes by the gable end and waited. She could see him through the branches. From his position, Fredriksson would be able to look down the hall and into part of the kitchen. Apparently he had found something interesting to look at, and it was 10 minutes before he moved again. This time he came closer to Linda. As he rounded the corner and passed her, she stood up and spoke in a low voice.
"Hello there, Herr Fredriksson."
He stopped short and spun towards her. She saw his eyes glistening in the dark. She could not see his expression, but she could hear that he was holding his breath, and she could sense his shock.
"We can do this the easy way, or we can do it the hard way," she said. We're going to walk to your car, and—"
He turned and made to run away. Linda raised her baton and directed a devastatingly painful blow to his left kneecap. He fell with a moan. She raised the baton a second time, but then caught herself. She thought she could feel Armansky's eyes on the back of her neck. She bent down, flipped Fredriksson over onto his stomach, and put her knee in the small of his back. She took hold of his right hand and twisted it around onto his back and handcuffed him. He was frail, and he put up no resistance.